ॐ जनजमनन्दस्य जनजनसलकय चक्षुसमिलितानि येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टं स्थपितं येन भूतले सायं रूपकदमायां ददति स्वापदञ्जिकम् Manchakaupaturubhascha pipasinduvaivacha Vidhitaram bhavanebhyo vajshamebhyo namo namaha. The sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. Quite interesting and unique. The subject matter, as described, maybe we could open a window of it. The subject matter is described in the first chapter, the introduction, as Poshanam, with the protection of the Lord. And the first story or pastime is of Ajamil. So Ajamil was brought up in good consciousness, and then due to some quirk of the age of what he saw, he fell down into degraded consciousness. But yet, Poshanam, he was protected by the Lord. In what form? The holy names of the Lord. Abhina Tvam Namanam. No different from the Lord. So Ajamil was good, then went bad, but then he had a happy ending. He was protected by the Lord and went to the spiritual world. Then in the next pastime, there was Daksha. And Daksha wanted to do some service for the Lord, but there was part of him, his false ego, in that service as well. He wished to have so many children. But yet it was his service to propagate the universe. And Narada Muni took them away two times, two sets of children he took away. And Daksha became so angry. He had prayed to the Lord for the ability to do the service even. Yet, when Narada Muni preached to his sons, he became furious and cursed Narada Muni. Narada Muni had appeared before him for his own protection. He wanted to save Daksha because he knew that Daksha had so much anger within him. So he knew that anger had to be released. So he stood in front of Narada Muni and accepted his curses. But it doesn't describe exactly, directly, specifically what happened to Daksha. But yet Narada Muni wished, it was Narada Muni's desire, a sage's, a sadhu's desire to save him. Why? Because he had already saved all the other descendants of Dhruva Maharaj, and Daksha had come in that family of Dhruva Maharaj. So he wanted to save him. So although it doesn't specifically say the result and how Daksha was benefited or protected from his materialistic consciousness. But yet, when the desire of such a great devotee is there, we know that it's going to end very favorably. Just like when Thakur Haridas and Nityananda Prabhu were going out to preach, to save all the fallen souls and beg them to worship Krishna, to follow Bhagavad Gita, to chant Krishna's names. They came across Jagai and Madhai. So Nityananda Prabhu said to Haridas, why don't we, if we can save these two, they're such abominable creatures, that then the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if they can be changed in character, the name of Mahaprabhu will be so much more glorified. So why don't you benefit them? And And Haridas Thakur said, I can tell that these two are already saved because it is your desire to help them. So this is the well wishes of an exalted personality like Narada Muni. They will bear their fruit. So Narada Muni, of his desire to save Daksha, will come to pass. And then the next pastime was interesting, with Indra being the demigod, and an asura, Vritrasura. Indra is used many times by Krishna's mercy, even though he's so exalted, to show the difficulties that can come within devotional service. When one's performing devotional service, should one keep some calm or desires, selfish, individualistic desires within one's heart, and Daksha also. But yet Indra was taught by Vritrasura, who Indra had considered his own enemy. And in one sense, Indra was saved by Vritrasura, because Vritrasura preached to him and said, you should send me back to Godhead by killing me. And he turned out to be a greater devotee than Indra himself. So we're going to find out in this chapter that describes protection by devotional service, we're going to describe how Vritrasura, although within the body of a demon, there was something protected from his previous birth, and that was his devotional service. It wasn't lost. It was kept. This is all that really can be protected, because the body, we get vaccinations to protect it. We do exercise to protect it. We take medicine to protect it. But ultimately, nothing can protect the body. So on the bodily level, there can be ultimately no protection. And on the mental level, on the subtle level, the sukshma sariya level of the false ego mind and intelligence, that doesn't die as the body dies. But yet, its very existence is false. And if that's protected, if we're protected only on the mental level, because the mind's business is to survive on the basis of false ego. So the mind is always busy making believe that it's doing something very, very important, but actually just engaging us in dvandva. What does dvandva mean? Duality. He dvandva moha vinyamuktam. So its business is to be thinking, this is bad, this is good, and I'm going to do this in the future. Just for 15 seconds, just watch your mind, and how many thoughts goes through your mind in that time, and how many moods shift in 15 seconds, unless you cheat and chant Hare Krishna and really focus your mind on the mantra. The mind will just continue going on and on and on. And if you protect the mind and its mission, it will keep you in the material world forever, because its mission is to keep alive the false ego, false identity separate from Krishna. So the real protection on the subtle body level is basically to get rid of the false ego, to dissolve that which exists, the false mind, the false intelligence, and false ego, false sense of identity. So real protection The real holding on to something substantial only exists on the spiritual level. The mind is always flickering. It's always changing. Can't hold on to anything, practically speaking. It is chanchalahi manas krishna astiram. It's unsteady. It's flickering. Always moving. It's the very nature of the mind. So there's no protection on that level, but the ultimate level of protection, of course, is on the spiritual level. So the spiritual advancement of Vritrasura had been protected from a previous life, even though he took his birth in a demonic family or in a demonic situation. But that is more for the subject of beginning the next chapter. We'll start hearing about Chitraketu Maharaj. But in this chapter, in chapter 13, we're going to hear about Indra. Now, interestingly, Indra had some service to perform. What was his service? To rule the heavenly planets, to quell the demons, etc. But yet, the demigods are considered sakkam devotees, or devotees who have some self-interest. They're not considered pure devotees on one level. How will he be dealt with? Look what he's done. He's killed Vishwarup, his spiritual master, a brahmana, in anger. And what was the result of that? He got himself into trouble. He actually got sinful reactions for that, in doing his own service. Because of something in his mentality, he got sinful reactions for that, and he divided that those sinful reactions amongst the desert, the women, the trees, and water. And now, what has he done in the pursuance of his service? He's been forced, and even amazingly enough, Lord Narayan instructed him on how to get the weapon to do the service of protecting the universe by killing Vritrasura. Now, he was born in a Brahmin family, the son of Tvastha, and also he was actually a great devotee. Powerful great devotee. So is he automatically freed from sins? No, not at all. Because there is some self-interest, there is some false ego. This is a very important point. Because in our devotional service, if we have any self-interest at all, then there may be reactions for our service, from doing the service, because, or not from the doing the service, but from doing the parts that are not actually service. The parts that are selfish, the parts that are filled with our own desires. Nisrachar kutinati jivahim san labha puja pratishtari anyati upasakakan. These are the weeds on our devotional service. And as we chant, it's like pouring water on the bhakti latta, but also the weeds can grow. The self-interest, things done in service, seemingly in service, but self-interest, false ego, they can really get in the way and reactions come. But for a devotee, actually, those reactions will be purifying. But in any case, that won't be the emphasis of this 13th chapter. We're going to hear what happened to Indra after performing his duty to maintain his position as the king of heaven of killing Vritrasura. So text 1. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King Parikit, who are so charitable... O King Parikit, who are so charitably disposed, is so charitably disposed. No? It's hard to understand that. O King Pricket, who are so charitably disposed, you know, like you are so charitably disposed, when Vritrasura was killed, all the presiding deities and everyone else in the three planetary systems was immediately pleased and free from trouble. Because Vritrasura had threatened them so heavily. He was such a powerful asura. So everyone was pleased and free from trouble. Everyone, that is, except Indra. Next verse too is very interesting. Therefore, the demigods, the great saintly persons, the inhabitants of Pitraloka and Bhutaloka, the demons, the followers of the demigods, and also Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the demigods subordinate to Indra, all returned to their respective homes, released from their anxiety, free, happy. While departing, however, no one spoke to Indra. Maharaj Pricket inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, O great sage, what was the reason for Indra's unhappiness? I wish to hear about this. When he killed Vritrasura, all the demigods were extremely happy. Why then was Indra himself unhappy? We'll read some of these purports after. So Sukadeva Goswami answered, when all the great sages and demigods were disturbed by the extraordinary power of Vritrasura, they had assembled to ask Indra to kill him. Indra, however, being afraid of killing a brahmana, declined their request. King Indra replied, when I killed Vishwarupa, I received extensive sinful reactions, but I was favored by the women, land, trees, and water, and therefore I was able to divide the sin among them. But now if I kill Vritrasura, another brahmana, how shall I free myself from the sinful reactions? Sukadeva Goswami said, hearing this, the great sages replied to King Indra, O King of Heaven, all good fortune to you, do not fear. We shall perform an Aswamedha sacrifice to release you from any sin you may accrue by killing the brahmana. The rishis continued, O King Indra, by performing an Aswamedha sacrifice and thereby pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul, Lord Narayan, the Supreme Controller, one can be relieved even of the sinful reactions for killing the entire world. Not to speak of killing a demon like Vritrasura. One who has killed a brahmana, one who has killed a cow, or one who has killed his father, mother, or spiritual master can be immediately freed from all sinful reactions simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Narayan. Other sinful persons, such as dog eaters and chandalas who are less than sudras, can also be freed in this way. But you're a devotee. And we shall help you by performing the great horse sacrifice. If you please Lord Narayan in that way, why should you be afraid? You will be freed even if you kill the entire universe, including the brahmanas, not to speak of killing a disturbing demon like Vritrasura. Sukadeva Goswami said, encouraged by the words of the sages, Indra killed Vritrasura. But when he was killed, the sinful reaction for killing a brahmana, brahmana hatya, certainly took shelter of Indra. Following the advice of the demigods, Indra killed Vritrasura, and he suffered because of his sinful killing. Although the other demigods were happy, he could not derive happiness from the killing of Vritrasura. Indra's other good qualities, such as tolerance and opulence, could not help him in his grief. So everyone encouraged Indra and said, don't worry, don't worry, don't worry. But then after the killing was done, everyone was happy. But Indra was the one carrying the reactions. So we'll go and read some of the purports there, and then we'll go back to that position. So everyone returned to their abodes while Indra, and no one spoke to Indra. Prabhupada's purport. In this connection, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, and there's a Sanskrit comment here. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the other demigods returned to their respective abodes, but Indra did not, for he was disturbed at having killed Vritrasura, who was actually a brahmana. After killing Vritrasura, Indra went to the Manasarova lake to become free from sinful reactions. When he left the lake, he performed an Aswamedha Yajna and then returned to his own abode. So this is a summary of what will actually happen. So he got sinful reactions. Quite interesting. He had performed something in service. All the sages encouraged him. But yet Indra had to suffer sinful reactions. Why? Why was Indra unhappy? Prabhupada's purport to text 3. This is, of course, Maharaj Prickett asked, why is he unhappy? This is, of course, a very intelligent question. When a demon is killed, certainly all the demigods are happy. In this case, however, when all the demigods were happy because of Vritrasura's having been killed, Indra was unhappy. Why? It may be suggested that Indra was unhappy because he knew that he had killed a great devotee in Brahmana. Vritrasura outwardly appeared to be a demon, but inwardly he was a great devotee and therefore a great Brahmana. Herein it is clearly indicated that a person who is not at all demoniac, such as Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj, may outwardly be a demon or be born in a family of demons. Therefore, in terms of real culture, one should not be considered a demigod or demon simply according to birth. In his dealings while fighting with Indra, Vritrasura proved himself a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Furthermore, as soon as he finished fighting with Indra and was apparently killed, Vritrasura was transferred to Vaikuntha Loka to become an associate of Sankarsan. Indra knew this, and therefore he was morose at having killed such a demon who was actually a Vaishnava or a Brahmana. So that answers one part of the question of why Indra was morose, because he knew that he had killed an exalted soul. But yet, moroseness wasn't all. He had to suffer sinful reactions. Let's read further. After all the assurances given by everyone, and then everyone left, they said, we'll perform an Aswamedha sacrifice, but yet they didn't at that time. They glorified the holy names and said, one chanting of the holy name removes so much sin, and yet, and we've even heard this example, where? Ajamil chanted Narayan, 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 not even intending to chant the holy name of Lord Narayan, just chanting his son's name, and yet all his sinful reactions were removed. How powerful is the holy name? And when the Yamadutas tried to take him away and punish him, the Vishnudutas said, you don't understand what religion actually is. He's sinless because he chanted the holy name. But yet Indra had to suffer sinful reactions. Why? Prabhupada's purport to text 8 and 9. It is said in the Brihad Vishnu Purana, Namno Yavati Shakti Papa Nirharane Hari Tavat Kartum Nashaknoti Patakam Pataki Nara. Also in the Prema Vavarta by Jagannanda Pandit, it is said, Eka Krishna Nam Papira Yatta Papachai. Papachai means destroying all sins. Eka Nam. One chanting of Krishna's name will destroy all sins. Bahu Janmase Papikarete Narai. This means that by once chanting the holy name of the Lord, one can be freed from the reactions of more sins than he can even imagine performing. The holy name is so spiritually potent that simply by chanting the holy name, one can be freed from the reactions of all sinful activities. What then is to be said of those who chant the holy name regularly or worship the deity regularly? For such purified devotees, freedom from sinful reactions is certainly assured. This does not mean, however, that one should intentionally commit sinful acts and think himself free from the reactions because he's chanting the holy name. Such a mentality is a most abominable offense at the lotus feet of the holy name. Namno balalyasya hi papabuddhi. The Lord's holy name certainly has the potency to neutralize all sinful activities, but if one repeatedly and intentionally commits sins while chanting the holy name, he is most condemned. These verses name the performers of various sinful deeds. In the Manusamhita, the following names are given. A son begotten by a Brahmanan born from the womb of a Sudra mother is called a Parasav or Nishad, a hunter accustomed to stealing. A son begotten by a Nishad in the womb of a Sudra woman is called a Pukash. A child begotten by a Kshatriya in the womb of a daughter of a Sudra is called a Ugra. A child begotten by a Sudra in the womb of the daughter of a Kshatriya is called a Chata. Does anyone know who is called Chata? Vidura, yes. Because he's a child begotten by a Kshatriya in the womb of a lower class woman. No, excuse me, that's a Sudra in the womb of a daughter of a Kshatriya. It's called Kshatriya. A child begotten by a Kshatriya in the womb of a lower class woman is called a Svada, or dog eater. All such offspring are considered extremely sinful. But the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so strong that all of them can be purified simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. The Hare Krishna movement offers everyone a chance to be purified, regardless of birth or family, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, Karatthunandra Pulinda Pukasa Abhira Sambhayavana Kasadhaya Yenye Chapapayara Pashraya Pshraya Sudyanti Tasmai Prabhavishnave Nama. Kiratas, Hunas, Andras, Pulindas, Pulkasas, Abiras, Sumbas, Yavanas, members of the Kasha race, and even others addicted to sinful acts can be purified by taking shelter of devotees of the Lord. For He is the supreme power. The Lord is the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. Even such sinful persons can certainly all be purified if they chant the holy name of the Lord under the directions of a pure devotee. Herein the sages encouraged King Indra to kill Vritrasura even at the risk of Brahmahatya, the killing of a Brahmana, and they guaranteed to release him from sinful reactions by performing an Aswamedha Yajna. Such purposefully devised atonement, however, cannot relieve the performer of sinful acts. This will be seen from the following verses. In other words, knowingly, intentionally, he committed a sinful act, thinking that after I sin, after I do this sin, I'm going to perform an aswamedha sacrifice to remove the reactions from the sin. So that does not do it. If we knowingly commit sin on the strength of performing a sacrifice or something, or chanting the holy name to remove the reactions of that sin, that gives us even more trouble. Namno baladyasya hi papabuddhi na vidyate tasya yamar hi shuddhi. Even if one is dragged to the court of Yamaraj to suffer, that will not remove the reaction of this for committing sins, thinking to neutralize them on the strength of chanting. So there's a very grave warning here. Text 10, Prabhupada's purport. After killing Vritrasura, Indra could not surpass the Brahmahatya, the sinful reaction for killing a Brahmana. But he killed Vishwarupa, who was a Brahmana, and he got freed from those reactions. Why was this worse? Formerly, Prabhupada explains, he had killed one Brahmana, Vishwarupa, out of circumstantial anger. In other words, it wasn't premeditated. But this time, following the advice of the sages, he killed another Brahmana purposefully. Therefore, the sinful reaction was greater than before. Angel could not be relieved from the reaction simply by performing sacrifices for atonement. He had to undergo a severe series of sinful reactions. And when he was freed by such suffering, the brahmanas allowed him to perform the horse sacrifice. The planned execution of sinful deeds on the strength of chanting the holy name of the Lord or undergoing prayaschitta atonement cannot give relief to anyone, even to Indra or Nahusha. Nahusha was officiating for Indra while Indra, absent from heaven, was going here and there to gain release from his sinful reaction. So after hearing the wonderful effects of chanting the holy name, in the first three chapters of this canto, now we're hearing a grave warning. Prabhupada has put that warning in the purports in those first three chapters as well, that Ajamil did not sin on the strength of chanting. And Jagai and Madai, what was their saving grace? So they were the most horrific sinners. They didn't blaspheme devotees. They did every other sin, but they did not criticize devotees. So these two are often said to be the greatest of the offenses against the holy name. And inattentiveness in chanting is said to be the root of all others. But these two offenses, but these two are said to be the greatest. Blaspheming the devotees and committing sins on the strength of chanting. Prabhupada's purport to 11. One cannot be happy by committing sinful acts, even if one is endowed with material opulence. Indra found this to be true. People began to blaspheme him, saying, "This person has killed a brahmana for the sake of enjoying heavenly material happiness." Therefore, in spite of being king of heaven and enjoying material opulence, Indra was always unhappy because of the accusations of the populace. So, material benefits are not the cause of happiness in and of themselves. So, now we're up to text. Text 12 and 13, where Indra, he was being pursued by the personification of the sinful reactions. Indra saw personified sinful reaction chasing him, appearing like a Chandal woman, a woman of the lowest caste. She seemed very old, and all the limbs of her body trembled. Because she was afflicted with tuberculosis, her body and garments were covered with blood. Breathing an unbearable fishy odor that polluted the entire street, she called to Indra, "Wait, wait, O king." Indra first fled to the sky. But there he also saw the woman of personified sin chasing him. This witch followed him wherever he went. At last, he very quickly went to the northeast and entered the Manasarova Lake. Always thinking how he could be relieved from the sinful reaction for killing a brahmana, King Indra, invisible to everyone, lived in the lake for 1,000 years in the subtle fibers of the stem of a lotus. So for 1,000 years, he had to suffer in this way. The fire god used to bring him his share of all the jagyas. But because the fire god was afraid to enter the water, why? Because fire and water don't get along very well. Because the fire god was afraid to enter the water, Indra was practically starving. So for 1,000 years he couldn't eat. He was starving, and starvation is the greatest pain. As long as Indra lived in the water, wrapped in the stem of the lotus, Nahusha was equipped with the ability to rule the heavenly kingdom due to his knowledge, austerity, and mystic power. Nahusha, however, blinded and maddened by power and opulence, made undesirable proposals to Indra's wife with a desire to enjoy her. Thus, Nahusha was cursed by a Brahmana and later became a snake. And in the Mahabharata, it speaks of Maharaj Yudhisthira meeting this snake, who was actually Nahusha, and answering Nahusha's questions. And one of the very important answers of the questions that Nahusha asked Yudhisthira, he asked something about a Brahmana. Who is a Brahmana in Kali Yuga? And Yudhisthira Maharaj, I can't remember who does the questioning. I think Nahusha asked the questions. And Yudhisthira says, there is, practically speaking, there is no one a Brahmana in Kali Yuga by birth. So you can't judge one's birth, one's being in a Brahmana, one Brahmana in a Brahmana's position by birth. So this is one of the important proofs that's used to explain this point, Kalo Sudra Sambhava, that everyone in Kali Yuga is Sudra by qualification, no one is considered Brahmana by birth. This conversation between Yudhisthira and Nahusha. So Nahusha got himself into trouble and was cursed. Indra's sins were diminished by the influence of Rudra, the demigod of all directions. Because Indra was protected by the goddess of fortune, Lord Vishnu's wife, who resides in the lotus cluster of Manasa Sarova's lake, Indra's sins could not affect him, but yet he had to stay there for so long, 1,000 years, almost starving. Indra was ultimately relieved of all the reactions of his sinful deeds by strictly worshipping Lord Vishnu. So much time, 1,000 years, it took him of worship, strictly, of austerity, living mystically in the stem of the intertwined of the in the stem of the lotus flower, and then he was relieved, diminished by Rudra or Shiva, and then relieved of the reactions of his sinful deeds by strictly worshipping Lord Vishnu. It's like sinful reactions are like a prison sentence. You suffer, and you may try everything in your power to remove the suffering, and it won't go, and then suddenly it goes. Why? Because the sinful reaction has been removed. So Indra, after relieved from his sinful deeds, the reaction to the sinful deeds by worshipping Lord Vishnu, he was relieved. Then he was called back to the heavenly planets by the Brahmanas and reinstated in his position. O King, when Lord Indra reached the heavenly planets, the saintly Brahmanas approached him and properly initiated him into a horse sacrifice and also made a jagya meant to please the Supreme Lord. Then, after his sinful reactions were finished, then they could perform the Asvamedha Jagya. The horse sacrifice performed by the saintly Brahmanas relieved Indra of the reactions to all his sins because he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead in that sacrifice. O King, although he had committed a gravely sinful act, it was nullified at once by that sacrifice. So it wasn't even completed. The reactions weren't fully completed by his 1,000 years of suffering, by Lord Shiva's diminishing them, and by strictly worshipping Lord Indra. It was nullified at once by that sacrifice, just as a fog is vanquished by the brilliant sunrise. King Indra was favored by Marichi and the other great sages. They performed the sacrifice just according to the rules and regulations, worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Super Soul, the original person. Thus Indra regained his exalted position and was again honored by everyone. In this very great narrative, and this is the final verse of this purport, of this chapter, In this very great narrative, there is glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. There are statements about the exaltedness of devotional service. There are descriptions of devotees like Indra and Vritrasura, different qualities of devotees, different purities, different levels of attachment. Vritrasura's only attachment was to Lord Narayan. He wasn't even attached to his body. And his mind was fully focused on the Lord. No attachments. What a highly qualified devotee. Indra, although a devotee, had a different level of attachments. Angry, he got angry. Sometimes Indra will get envious. Sometimes he will become fearful. But yet he was a devotee. And he performed his deeds and he had to get some reactions for them. But ultimately, by Krishna's grace, he was freed. So in this narration, there are descriptions of devotees like Indra and Vritrasura, and there are statements about King Indra's relief from sinful life and about his victory in fighting the demons. By understanding this incident, one is relieved of all sinful reactions. Therefore, the learned are always advised to read this narration. If one does so, one will become expert in the activities of the senses. His opulence will increase and his reputation will become widespread. If anyone wants their opulence to increase and reputation to become widespread and expert in the activities of the senses, this is some of the shruti phala, the fruit from hearing this pastime. One will be relieved also of all sinful reactions. He will conquer his enemies, and the duration of his life will increase. Because this narration is auspicious in all respects, learned scholars regularly hear and repeat it on every festival day. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 6th canto, 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled King Indra Afflicted by Sinful Reactions. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jay, Srila Prabhupada ki jay. King Indra, who is so merciful and assisting in all the pastimes of Krishna, ki jay, Vritrasura, ki jay. Narada Muni, also ki jay. And Srila Prabhupada, ki jay. All the devotees, ki jay. Gaura Bhaktivinoda, ki jay. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
After having promised Indra to support him, what would have been the spirit that the demigod
left without talking to him, without noticing anything?
Yeah.
And it seems like they understood he had to go through something before they could help. Before they could help him.
Obviously, were prepared, intending to do it, but they wanted something to transpire first.
They had to. It seemed there had to be something else that happened. So, were they duplicitous in their promise? Because the way it's described, it seems as if they just promised, yes, yes, don't worry about a thing, we'll take care of everything, you won't have to suffer anything. It almost seems that way.
Well, I tend to put myself in Indra's shoes and think how I feel.
Yes. But actually, we can't put ourselves in Indra's shoes. Because Indra's shoes are very opulent. And he's an Ishwara. Just wait one moment, please. He's an Ishwara. So his consciousness, even though we put ourselves, we project, but basically we're just projecting our consciousness upon him. But he's in a completely different category. When he does something, it is with a different spirit than when we do something. But yet, these pastimes are told to us for a particular purpose, and I think that's part of it. It seems that that's part of it. We identify naturally with Indra. He's just doing his service, and he had to suffer, and everyone said, hey, they were going to support him and just see what happened. Just see. But yet, Indra was purified by that. First level is his pastime. Second level, Indra was purified by that. So sometimes in purification there's suffering. And we can't avoid that. So is the suffering bad for us? from our perspective, of course, no one likes to suffer. So we'd rather do without the suffering. So we, on one level, we think it's bad. But yet we go to the doctor when we have a boil to get it lanced, even though there's some suffering involved. Because it's required. So it's for the ultimate good, too. So by Krishna's arrangement, Rudra diminished the sinful reaction. By Krishna's arrangement, he had shelter and it actually never afflicted him directly, yet he had to suffer in a different way. And he attained the shelter of Lakshmi Devi in Manasa Sarov, in the form of that lotus. A powerful lesson is given to all of us in this pastime. And that is, be very, very careful of committing sinful activities on the strength of chanting. Because suffering for us will result, and if we don't want to suffer, we shouldn't do it. And also the danger of having some personal motivation. A pure devotee, he takes the suffering as tateyanu kampam susamikshaman. Oh, Krishna has minimized it. Did you want to also add something on this?
No, the point is that...
That
there's a history behind why the Bhutashura appeared even.
Yes.
And caused the trouble, and Indra was the cause of the history that created the problem. So it wasn't that Indra was just innocently sort of minding his own business and he was asked to do something and people said, we'll help you, and then they didn't help him.
Well, why don't you explain further what you mean?
Well, he was the cause of the problem.
Why don't you explain further about that?
So therefore...
Oh, where?
Where?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
How is Indra the cause of the problem?
He killed Vishnu. He offended his
Vishnu. Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
Then Kvastu became angry, then the demon appeared. Everything was consequently one after another from Indra's original disregard of his appropriate
behavior. And why did he have Vishwarupa as the priest? Because he offended Brihaspati.
Yeah.
So there was pride. And just see how this other point is put in there, that when one is in an opulent position, one tends to get proud and cause offenses that entangle one in so much trouble. And what happened to Nahusha when he took over that position temporarily even? He also got into trouble with it. So there is also an indication that we should be very, very careful about dealing with opulent positions, dealing with opulence. Not the powerful ones. Even the powerful ones have trouble dealing with it. Nahusha had so much, it even mentions that he had so much austerity. What was it, Nahusha? He was equipped with ability to rule the heavenly kingdom due to his knowledge, austerity, and mystic power, and yet he had trouble. That was from text 16. Did you want to add any more?
It just seems that there were therefore hidden things that aren't revealed. Just if you look at that little event, you didn't know what happened before, you may see it one way, but the hidden things that caused that the sages were willing to give their blessings for Indra still had some thing he had to undergo. Even though they assured him.
So everything isn't simple
No. Either.
In fact, we might even say that nothing is simple. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
It says that we're free from sinful reaction by humans. But often in devotional service, we talk about karma and that we're always bound by karma. So, maybe Krishna still teaches us lessons, even though we might be free from karma.
Yeah, but there's different levels of karma. So at the time of initiation, for example, there's the contemporary karma that maintains this body, because this, if we had no karma, we'd die, because we're maintained by our karma. So everything but that karma is removed at the time of initiation. So that karma is necessary for us. That's Krishna's grace, and he uses that karma, as you're saying, to purify us so we can make advancement. So we have a platform to exist on, to maturate our devotion. So that karma too is Krishna's mercy, and how to use that, whatever karma we particularly have in Krishna's service, and how to view it so it doesn't hold us back, but rather helps elevate us, is part of advancing in Krishna consciousness, learning how to do that. So when a person who, just like sometimes a store will have a sale, you know, the advertisers come in and this is only 50 cents. So you come in the shop to get that one thing, but you end up getting so many other things too. So similarly, these shruti falls, not that they're false, but they attract us. If we have material desires, we want to conquer our enemy or increase our opulence or our life's duration or remove sinful reactions, we'll read it. But in reading the pastime, not only will that will happen, but we'll get more as well. We'll get some more deeply, a more deep spiritual understanding of what devotional service is. And when we hear Vichasura's words to Indra, etc. Did you have a question, Paul?
Yeah, probably. If you could please clarify a bit further on the offense of, you know, sinful, or committing offense to the strength of the holy name. For example, Ajamila, it is said that he was brought up in the proper culture and he knew the holy name, he was chanting it. And then he committed the offense. Not once, but repeatedly, because once he started, he went all out. And yet it is said that once you start committing that offense, your entire birthday ritual just gets destroyed and you can never regain it again.
No, not first of all, never not regain. It's not never. It just becomes covered. What we gain is eternally ours. So whatever advancement we make is eternally ours, but it can be covered, but never lost. First point. But still, Ajamil, although he had chanted Hare Krishna, and then he had engaged in pious activities and brahminical activities, and then he had fallen from that position. He never was thinking that I'm going to do horrible things and remove the reactions from those horrible things by chanting or by doing something spiritual. That specific attitude of I'm going to do something bad and remove the reactions through doing something spiritual, such as chanting the holy names, that specifically is the offense. So if one, by his nature, or by bad habit, or by bad association, commits some improper activity, that is not the same as a conscious thought, as Indra did, I'm going to do something sinful, kill this Brahmin, and then I'm going to perform a ceremony to remove the reaction. That's not what Ajamil did. He was happy to go on sitting for the rest of his life and enjoying life in that way, in his illusion. So different. Okay, that's it now. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Thank you very much. So next week, Krishna willing, we'll begin the story of King Chitraketu, and that will lead to a connection between that pastime and the story of Vishvasura.